welcome to Keys of the Kingdom. I'm Brother Gregory, and we're going to talk about the Kingdom of God. I was going to ask Cheryl, did she have a topic that she wanted to talk about today?
Okay, yes, actually, we do have a topic today. We're talking about basic energy force and our energy field and how we affect other people's energy.
Well, there's an awful lot of people that make me really tired.
Oh, my goodness. You know,
I'm just kidding.
As a person who tends to be a little bit more introverted, when I get around a lot of people and a lot of energy, it does make me tired. So I related to Zed very, very much.
Oh, I remember a line from a movie, was it Got Mail, which was actually a redo of an old Jimmy Stewart movie that was from a Hungarian book called Shop Around the Corner. And but the line was not in the original book, but it was a pretty good line. A girlfriend of the star was... very energetic woman, you know. She was just go, go, go all the time. And he said, she makes coffee nervous. And the statement doesn't make any sense, but everybody got it.
Exactly. Exactly. Because people do affect our energy. When someone's in a good mood or a bad mood or storming around or dancing down the street. You know, it affects us.
Right, and, you know, it's. I've actually, just while we brought this subject up, I kind of feel like this is a quiz show where you pop up with some sort of topic and then I have to talk about it for an hour. But I actually got lots of stories on that subject that just came up this week, so it must be a good topic. And since this show with you, Cheryl, is always the show that we get into more of the campfire talk and the stuff that's a little bit what some people might call out there. You know, like somebody was saying, well, we don't want the new agey people to get involved with the church. You know, somebody said that. And I said, you know, there's probably nobody more new agey than the early church. You know, I mean, these are guys that are talking about seeing angels and miracles and you know, what you think is going to make a difference. Faith is a huge part of, you know, whether or not you can walk through the valley of the shadow of death. All these are kind of new agey ideas. Now, I'm not saying that everything in new agey thinking is good either. We have to take things with a certain guidance of the Spirit, but the idea that other people around about you can drain your energy, or that they can give you energy, or that they can give you energy that is bad for you, are all real concepts and real things that happen all the time. You know, I tell people that, you know, that if you get injured and hurt yourself by accepting the pain with patience, feeling it, drawing your attention to it, that you can actually heal quicker. Now, some people say, oh, that's mumbo-jumbo, mysterious stuff. Well, the fact is, in laboratory studies, it's proven that that's actually true, that your attention and the attitude that you have towards the pain can have a tremendous effect on how quickly you heal. And I've had those personal experiences myself. Doctors are saying it all the time now that your attitude will make a huge difference in how you heal and how you get well. So the attitude of other people around you can also have that effect on you. Their attitude towards and around you will change your mood. It shouldn't be that way. Now, if we're really centered in something that's not affected so much by the world, and that's really what Christianity was all about, that people talk about being centered in Christ and doing things in the name of Christ, according to the character of Christ, that this changed them. You know, I mean, they faced the beasts in the arena, they faced persecution, they were sometimes gathered up almost right away under Nero's kind of bugarump in Rome to be burned. There's over 3,000 Christians buried under the probably oldest standing church in Christian church in the world, which is in Rome, which is near the area that they call Britannia in Rome, and was built by two nieces of Paul the Apostle, and it's still standing today. And they actually gathered up the martyred bodies of Christians and buried them there in a common grave, you know, because of this kind of pandemonium that took place in the streets where they were just going around and there were riots, so to speak, and nobody to stop them, and a lot of people were brutally murdered. That attitude that what they call trying to think of the word where that you know where they have this pandemonium that breaks out, mass hysteria is the term that is commonly used, is a result of everybody thinking in a certain way, and they get angry, they get violent, and they get this vengeful, angry attitude, and it carries over to others, and before you know it, people are doing things they wouldn't normally do. So there's a positive side to the energies around us, and there's a negative side to the energies around us. So life would be a lot better if we could only be surrounded by people with those good, positive energies, except for life doesn't work that way. We're often surrounded by all kinds of people. And so therefore, we have to find that root, that connection, which, you know, we go back to some of the other shows where we talked about quantum and string and what scientists are discovering about parallel dimensions and all this kind of stuff fits right into what those New Agey early Christians were thinking. That there was veils that could be pulled back and you could see angels and all these kind of crazy ideas that were back then and now scientists are beginning to suspect is true because they're finding evidence of it in these theories that they're coming up with. But the reality is that, and this is one of the things we talked about before, that there's more than one of these dimensions and you can be connected to one that has this the things that we equate with peace and justice and love and patience, or we could be connected with this other one that's kind of impatient, authoritarian, controlling, manipulative, self-serving. And so these are the two spectrums, these two realms and worlds, and we're kind of caught in between. And a lot of people are caught in between, and so sometimes, you know, they kind of move over to this side and sometimes they kind of move over to that side and they're all around us. So where they're going, what they're connecting to is affecting who they are and the energy that they're giving off round about them. Well, by the same token, when you have a relationship with that individual, it can affect you. And it can draw you where they're going. And now if you have a relationship with the other side of that equation, that realm, that dimension, then you can have an effect on them. So there's a constant battle. And we actually see this with a lot of married couples where they're having this battle between them. And the bad thing about this is that evil side, that wicked side, that dark side, that less reasonable side doesn't really care if you agree with it or not. They just want you to disagree. They want you to be divided. They want you to argue. They want you to battle amongst yourselves. You know, and I've written articles on News with You, the dialectic, the chessboard of the dialectic, where they just want to create conflict because it weakens you. It drains you, this conflict. You know, I don't know how many people haven't experienced this. I don't know if there are any that haven't experienced this, where somebody gets all upset and they're arguing and it just drains you. You know, all the life just goes out of you. And the fact is we have different personalities and we have different personas and And so what, and this has been going on for age after age after age, where we fall into these different personalities or these characters or character traits, and then we end up writing stories about it, about, you know, Frankenstein monsters and vampires and werewolves. And these are all really just stories about, these are the dreams that we have when we deal with real life, because we have people out there that are like vampires. They just draw energy out of other people. They suck it out of other people. And we have other people that are just kind of brutes. They just kind of shout you down, and they kind of take over the situation, and they humiliate you, and they kind of bark you into a corner. And they can do it to lesser or greater degrees. And sometimes, you know, they're pretty nice people, and then all of a sudden they kind of get in this mood, you know, full moon or something, and then they turn into werewolves. You know, so I'm kind of analogizing the story with the actual spiritual reality that is going on all about us and playing out in our physical relationships with each other. Most of our real relationships are involved with some sort of spiritual tie between us. You know, like ex-spouses, you know, after a divorce, there's still some sort of connection with that individual. No matter how much you want to break that connection, it's still there. And, you know, because there had been a relationship and there are things that tie this, what we want to do is untie those knots that are tied with resentment and anger and judgment. We want to untie those knots by letting them go. And what one cuts those to the chase of those Gordian knots that we tie ourselves with, the negative aspects of everybody, because everybody has some negative aspects to their character. Everybody has some positive aspects to their character. Even though we know some people that we don't think there's anything positive about them, there really is. they have something good in them. But they may be more one way or than the other, but maybe they're more one way than the other just around you. I remember once when I was real young, and there was this girl I kind of liked, and she kind of liked me, and we were just kind of getting to know each other, and I met her brother, and her brother thought, like, what do you see in her? he couldn't believe that anybody would like her. Well, the fact is that she, you know, she actually, when she was around me, she had a lot different personality. When she was around him, she had her, you know, sister-brother personality, and she had a kind of a conflict or competition between her and her brother. And so she wore these different personalities, and I never saw the other one. but we have that in relationships, you know, where you have somebody who, you know, when they're around this person, they're at peace and they're delighted and they're happy and they're smiling, and all of a sudden this other guy comes in the room or other person comes in the room and they're grumpy. You know, hello, Mr. Grumpy, as they so to say, because this other person gets... My dad told me a story about there was a guy that he had met a number of times. Sometimes he'd meet him on an elevator, or sometimes he'd meet him in a courthouse or something, and he didn't see him very often, but he says, whenever I was in the same room with this person, I just suddenly broke out in a sweat. He says he just kind of like trembled in a sweat. My dad was a big guy, pretty, you know, he was a commando in the war and all this stuff. He wasn't afraid of very much, you know. You never really saw him afraid of anything. He never could figure it out why, because he said the guy was never belligerent, the guy was never mean, the guy never did anything. They never had any fight. Excuse me. But he said just his presence had some sort of negative effect on my dad, and he couldn't figure out what it was, you know. And you could make all kinds of speculations. So, the fact is there's some kind, and we call it chemistry. That's another thing we put on it. You know, there's kind of some kind of chemistry between these people, or bad chemistry between these people. But I really believe that much of that, most of that, that we experience and sometimes don't even know that we're experiencing, is because of connections on a spiritual realm. Now, it doesn't mean that because you like this person that there isn't anything bad about them. And it doesn't mean because you dislike that person that there's no bad about them. But it's a complex combination of things. And somebody called me up this week, and they had a business partner that they had been in business with for a while now, and they were having trouble with them, and they wanted to, well, their business partner wanted to be bought out, and they weren't being reasonable, and they wanted to know, really their question was, are they being reasonable with their partner and taking the stance that they are? And I knew from day one that person shouldn't be in partner with each other. Those people shouldn't be in partner with each other because they are, not just because they are different personalities, but because the one is a draining personality. He will undermine everything. He is about himself. He has a selfish personality. That is his goal. You know, and he had a bad family life when he was younger, and there may be reasons and excuses, but the reality is he has this draining, selfish personality. He wants other people to respond to him in certain ways or feel bad that they don't. You know, he plays the guilt trips and all those kinds of things.
I've been around people like that.
Yeah, they're all over the place. Almost anybody can be that way. Uh-huh. You know, at a particular time. That's the other thing, is that there's a character in the movies, and I'm trying to think of what movie it is. It doesn't really matter, but it's one of these superhero things or something. But supposedly, you know, if you touch this person, you start to become drained of all your energy, but they take on your characteristics, your personalities, when they do this. And the reality is the people that upset you, people that make you angry. I talked about this once on the show. My fourth grade teacher was unfair to me once, really unfair. That always bugged me. I was kind of this justice thing, you know, where, you know, I could get along with a lot of things, but if I saw injustice, it made me mad, which was not a good thing. I suppose it would be better than seeing injustice and it making me happy, but still I shouldn't get angry at that. I should see it and not be judgmental, and then that gives you power to do something good out of it. But if you get angry, you get sucked into it. Anyway, she upset me, and it affected me when she did that. I didn't do anything about her injustice, didn't have the energy. I was drained by the fact that I was angry. But years and years later, I'm raising my own kids, and they were goofing off like kids would do, and all of a sudden I found myself saying something just like my fourth grade teacher. And I realized that some of my fourth grade teacher was in me because of that anger, because there's an exchange of energy. When you know, people say you become like that which you hate.
Yeah.
Because hate, judgment, is a focusing of your attention on something. And that focus will cause that thing to get in you. I mean, they make science fiction movies about this kind of stuff all the time. And the reason they do is because there is a certain truth in the spirituality of it. And this is why Christ says, resist not evil. He doesn't mean, you know, don't resist being evil. He's saying, don't fight against evil. As if you are some kind of, you know, superhero and you're going to overcome it and destroy it. Then you're playing into its realm of being authoritarian and destructive. And so, because you're focusing on it, and it's going to draw you in, you're going to become like that which you hate. I'll give you another example. Movie Dr. Zhivago. These are stories. People don't read books anymore. They see movies. But there is a book called Dr. Zhivago. But in it, there's this one character, I can't remember his name, Russian name. And he was a kind of a socialist and all this stuff and fighting for the people. And he really wanted the people to be free and not oppressed. And he hated injustice and all this kind of stuff. And he eventually became this powerful leader that was doing all the same things that he hated when he was a young man. and he was betraying justice because he hated injustice so much so that he focused on it until he became like that. Che Guevara is another example. I'm just astounded that, you know, Che Guevara saw the injustice when he was riding through South America, but then he was committing all these injustices. And I always think it's funny when I see, you know, there's some black people that, you know, that are politically active and they're wearing Che Guevara T-shirts, you know, big pictures of Che Guevara on there, like he's their hero or something. If you actually study the guy, he hated blacks. He thought they were less than human and wanted to exterminate them all. And, you know, but we get attached to things and ideas and react to people, and we become like little pinballs, and we're knocked all over, which is back to what I was saying, is that we need to find something to root into, to focus on that is positive and righteous. And I haven't seen anyone in history that did it more clearly than Christ, even with all the corruption and the twisting of what Christ was saying and the misinterpretation and all this stuff. When you go and you look at what he was actually saying, you know, the truth is there. That's kind of why men like Thomas Jefferson, he gets a lot of flack from this from modern Christians, but he took the Bible and cut out everything that wasn't Christ. He just took a Bible and he cut out every page, probably had to take a couple of them, where Christ was talking. He cut them out and he pasted them all together, so he had a whole Bible that was Christ only. it was like the red letter Bible with only the red print. And it wasn't because he was against all the rest, because he had read all the rest, but it was because of the fact that churchianity brings in all these theologians and preachers, and they start putting their own little spin on it. When they do that, they're putting their own little personality into Christ. And before you know it, you have whole churches that believe in a false Christ because they've twisted it around. And what I'm trying to get back to is, instead of being drained by all this energy around you and people, and, you know, somebody might drain you one day, and the next day they'll lift you up. And it's because we are being tossed to and fro. Another thing the Bible talks about, tossed to and fro by all these ideas and emotions that come in from TV and what happens around us. You know, like 9-1-1, when the buildings fell, everybody's spirits fell with it because an object fell. And that's because we actually worship the objects around us. They give us a sense of security, a sense of stability. That's our rock. That's where we're rooted into these objects. And if they were swept away, we'd be swept away. And our emotions would be torn down. And the fact is we need to move away from that so that we're rooted in something that is more solid than the physical world. And it's the spiritual world. And what you do is you tap into a source of energy that your physical body can't really tap into. It's a spiritual energy. And this is why the apostles were so full of that they were able to heal people, because they were tapped into that inexhaustible sense. You know, a woman can produce a child inside of her body and then feed that child with her own flesh, where the child literally feeds from that woman and his health and being, and is dependent upon her health and being. The nutrients in her go into him, but also an emotional and a spiritual energy that is in her can go into him, and or her, you know, whatever the child is, so that she actually has a healing effect on that baby. And we sense it because we've become so intellectual. I wanted to pull up here a clock so that I could keep track of the time, because we're running out of this half hour already.
Okay.
But, you know, kid gets an owie and he goes, "Mommy, kiss it." you know, is there really a magical ability of her mother's kiss to heal that sore? Well, in a way there is, because the presence of the mother gives him a sense of security, so he calms down. The affection of the mother gives him a sense of also security and stability. He's not alone. You know, the kindness of the mother allows him to feel the pain without fearing the pain. And yeah, he will heal quicker. You know, in some cases, I've seen miraculous healings with the same spiritual process. In some places, I sometimes see the healing actually slow down because people believe they can't be healed. You know, somebody mentioned cancer and they go, oh my gosh, I'm done for. They've already been defeated by the word cancer. But somebody else gets a positive attitude and all of a sudden their cancer goes into remission. You know, we talked about that, I think, on the program not too long ago, about the fellow who was given a few weeks to live. He had terminal cancer, and so he just went back home to Greece where he was born and got in a little, you know, place near his folks, you know, or I guess he actually his folks that is still alive there. And he just started eating different and taking time and relaxing and not worrying about it. And next thing you know, cancer went in total 100% remission. He started a new business, and he's still alive 40 years later. And he didn't do what the doctor said to do. And they just say, oh, coincidence. But, you know, there's lots of things that drain us. People can do it. Attitudes can do it. Attitudes we pick up from other people. And so maybe in the second half we'll talk about some of the things that you can do to create a more positive energy environment for yourself so that you can be naturally healed and naturally defended against disease, naturally defended against all sorts of predation. Because it isn't just disease that can kill us, you know. Evil can kill us. And you've heard me talk about, you know, having to deal with people that are extremely angry, those mobs and stuff like that, and walking away unscathed. And it has to do with the energy that you're giving off around you. And we've had several conversations this week and on our network about this, and so maybe we'll bring that up in the second half of the show. I don't know how deep we want to go because some of them are kind of scary stories. But anyway, we'll do that after the break.
Okay, sounds good. Well, thank you all for tuning in.
Hi, I'm Brent. I'm a contact minister for the Living Network in Northeast Missouri. You're not the only one out there with the desire to learn the truth. There are people all over the world coming together in faith, hope, and charity. Join us at one of the upcoming gatherings to meet new people, fellowship, work, and play. Whether it's the Fall Burning Bush Festival in Oregon or the Spring Gathering in Northeast Missouri, you'll get all the details when you join the Living Network. Go to hisholychurch.org and click on the network link. Find out what you've been missing. You'll be glad you did.
Okay, well, we're back with Brother Gregory, and so throw another log on the fire.
Well, if you're not in the south of the border, I guess that would be a good thing to do. But that's one of the things about this radio is that it'll be heard everywhere eventually, or can be, and a lot of people are all over the globe. But we're trying to talk about some of these things that doesn't matter where you're at, that it can make a difference in your life. So there's positive things about the energy levels of yourself and the people around you, and there could be negative things about that, and that balance between there is what people are always trying to do, the same as when you throw a log on the fire. It's to warm you, to protect you from the cold that's out there, and it's the same thing that we're doing when we're talking about the spiritual logs that you have to throw on your inner fire to burn more brightly. As an individual, the Indians used to have an old saying that yesterday is ashes, tomorrow is wood, only today burns brightly. And the reality is where you want to be in that higher energy state is in the moment, because it's only the moment that really burns brightly. You can remember the past to some degree, and you can think about the future, but you really have to live in the moment. So that's one thing that you want to always focus on. Kingdom of Heaven is in the moment, and that's what Christ was saying. The Kingdom of Heaven is at hand. It's now. It's not coming in 2,000 years. He stood right there and told the Pharisees, I'm going to take the kingdom away from you. So it had to have been there. And I'm going to give it to another who will bear fruit. And so bearing fruit, there's another hint as to what we're looking for. We're looking at, why do you want more energy? Do you want more energy so that you can waste it? Or do you want more energy so that you can bear fruit? And then what kind of fruit? Good fruit? Wholesome fruit? So your attitude, why you want to be full of energy, will make a difference as to whether you can receive that energy or not. It will also make a difference as to what kind of energy you can receive and share. That's another thing. Do you want to share the energy you have? Or do you want to keep it? What happens if you have water and you want to hoard that water in one place and just pool it up in a big pond? It will become stagnant and green and full of things that make it unwholesome to drink. But if you flow, that water flows, it has a natural purification process as it flows. And so it's the same way with energy. That if you want to capture energy so that you have all the energy, it's like a miser, an energy miser, where you're hoarding all the gold and taking it out of circulation. Well, it can't do any good if it's all locked up and you're safe. So the energy you want to share it. And you want to share it in a way that will give life more abundant. And that's why Christ says, when he's talking about give up your life so that you have life more abundant. That's what he's talking about. There's a precept in these things that he's saying. It's on many different levels. He's not just talking about something so that you got something to say up in the pulpit, or that, you know, you got something to memorize in Bible school. He's telling you the keys to the kingdom, the precepts to the kingdom. What you bind on earth is bound in heaven. In other words, if you bind yourself to someone who is evil by hating them, you create a relationship with them. You hate them, you know, and that creates a bond between you and them. And that bond between you and them binds you to them. And like I said earlier in the show, you can start to become like that very thing you hate because you're giving it all this attention. Now, I don't know how many books and stories have been written about people who have done that. You know, it hated somebody and then became like those people they hated. So what you bind on earth with that hate is bound in heaven in that spiritual realm as well. And you are pulled in that direction, and your energy is going to become a duplicate of that energy, which is the energy of not sustaining life, an energy of taking life from one another. This is the difference. We talked about this in the different realms, that there's this realm that broke off, whatever you want to call it, heaven, hell, whatever, you know, the evil section broke off from heaven. Adam and Eve, they had the tree of life. But because they wanted to eat of the tree of knowledge, they were separated from the tree of life. So now they had to eat, you know, things of the ground and animals and all these sort of things. They're telling you precepts. If you break off from that thing that gives life, that bright side, you know, and go and live in darkness, then you'll have to get energy somewhere else. That's, you know, we see this in nature, actually, at the volcano vents at the off the coast of Oregon. There's volcano vents way down there in the bottom of the ocean where it's really dark, very, very deep, very, very dark, off the continental shelf. And there's these vents down there, and they go down there and they find life teeming around those vents. There's no sunlight down there, but yet there's plants down there growing. They have learned to convert the energy that's coming out of the volcanic vent, the heat and the minerals and everything, they convert that instead of photosynthesis. But life finds a way. But you want to be tapping into a source of life that will give you life more abundance. That's an inexhaustible source of life. And when you cut yourself off from that by acting contrary to its nature, then you have to get energy somewhere else. And this other realm, once you get energy by taking it away from other people, taking away from animals, taking away from plants. Now, we can eat plants, and then we can cultivate those plants, and we can actually eat animals, and we can cultivate those animals. And so that, you know, if I wasn't around, all the sheep that I raise would be dead because I keep them safe. We have a symbiotic relationship. I protect them from coyotes and mountain lions and bobcats. I protect them from harsh winters. I protect them from droughts. I make sure there's food. I lead them beside the still waters. And so we have a symbiotic relationship. So we eat some of them from time to time. But as a herd, they live and they continue. But we shouldn't be eating each other. And they talk about that in the Bible, this cannibalism, eating the flesh of my children and all this kind of stuff in society. What they're talking about is what society is actually doing today with socialism. They're taking from their neighbor, forcing their neighbor to give up to them so that they can be socially secure. That sets a pattern. And we were in an earlier program that I did another network. We were reading the Ron Paul going away speech, and he was talking about some of these same principles. Is that America is willing to invade other countries and take away from those other countries? 500,000 Iraqis died, according to the U.S. government numbers. Other numbers estimate that the numbers have been up in over a million, but 500,000 by U.S. government statistics have died. Most of those deaths were children because of the 1990 war alone. 500,000 dead. And the State Department, U.S. Secretary of State, says, and he's quoting them, that it was worth it. That it was worth it. For what we have made of Iraq today. Iraq is, they're still killing each other, more so than ever under Saddam Hussein. Now, I'm not saying he was a good leader, but we did not make things better. And the price, I don't think, was worth it. But we've accepted it, but Ron Paul was saying that we've accepted the idea that that's okay because we do that at home with our neighbor. We want better schools. We pass a bill that goes into our neighbor's house. I had a friend who, an acquaintance, who voted that we keep the inheritance tax in the state of Oregon. He says, "Well," and I said, "You did?" And he said, "Yeah, well, you just have to look at the revenue. We need the revenue." I said, "Yeah, but isn't inheritance tax robbing widows and orphans?" And he says, "Well, we need the revenue." Didn't want to address that, you know. He himself, if he and his wife were killed in an automobile accident right now, his kids are, you know, they're older. I think one of them's still a teenager, but they're old enough in college. They would lose the house and everything because they would have to pay inheritance tax on all that, on the business, because the house and the business are all part of one thing. They would lose it because of the inheritance tax. Because the parents die, the children have to pay more money. Now, people, when they talk about inheritance tax, they think, oh, that's just going to be for the millionaires. And we can take from the millionaires because they got millions already. If it's okay to take from them, then it's okay to take from people that only have 500,000. If it's okay to take from people who have 500,000, let's take from people who have 250,000. How about the people who have less than that? And what happens is if it's okay to take from them, their goods, it's okay to take from you your goods. So you got, say you had six kids, three of them are boys. That's what we have. I have six kids, three of them are boys. According to that reasoning, it's okay that you take three of my boys. and send them to Iraq or Afghanistan and have arms and legs blown off. I mean, you got three more kids. I only have two kids and you have six, so we should be able to take some of your kids. Once you cross that line where it's okay to take from your neighbor because you want something, you've moved into an area where you are now compatible with an energy zone, hell itself, where you're going to create a connection between you and that realm. And it's going to make you vulnerable every time you meet somebody who is also connected to that realm. They can have power over you. They can control your emotions. They can drain the energy off of you because the energy in you is now compatible with the energy in them. Now, say you said, I'm not going to take from my brother. I'm not going to covet my neighbor's goods. I'm not going to desire anything that is my neighbor. Because it's wrong. It's just not in me to think that way. Suddenly, the energy in you has a frequency, a light, or a pattern that is not compatible with those other blood-sucking vampires that come from hell. And they can't draw energy from you as long as you don't react to them. Now, they may poke at you and they make you angry. And I had a situation with a guy who, in one of our talks, and we went on a tour all over the country, went to about 30 different states, I don't know whether it was 10,000, 15,000 miles. And there was a guy that showed up in one, and I knew he was going to be there. I had never met him before, but anyway, he was antagonistic, and he would make comments when I was talking and speak out and interrupt. And I could feel that he was trying to poke at me. And his rationale wasn't very good, but it was like he had this knack for poking at you that would actually try to irritate you. And I actually looked him up on the net, and he's referred to as a Bible bully by other preachers because he's evidently done this with other preachers. He's very good at it, poking and making somebody upset, because as soon as you get upset at him, he's got an in into your armor. He can control. He can actually start draining you. And I could feel it. I mean, you could feel it almost like you could see the strings where he was trying to do this. And it didn't work real good, and I was becoming aware, more and more aware of it. I could feel the energy levels being pulled on me because this is what he was trying to do. But I wasn't going to play that game, and I kept going back to that anchor part. We call it the rock, Christ consciousness, whatever it is, the way Christ was thinking. The name of Christ, the character of Christ. We have lots of different labels we put on it, but it's actually a spiritual attitude of service to others, of giving life rather than hoarding it. And I stayed rooted in that. And when he, after the talk was over, I was talking to some from people who sit down south, I won't say exactly where, but I was talking to some from people from one of the other local states who'd come over to listen. And he interrupted and started that, kind of shouting. And he was quite a ways away, so you could hear him all the way across the room and everything. And, the loud, boisterous talking, his preaching voice, and everything. But he was poking at me, and I could feel it. And I just let it go. But I turned towards him and turned my palms upward and walked towards him slowly and smiled and just thought, forgive me. I could see that he's addicted to this, having to make you angry, because that's how he gets his energy. That's how he gets his control. He needed to make you angry. That's the kind, he had this anger look on his face all the time. I could see it, and some others, I evidently didn't see it. And I just kept walking towards him, walked right up to him. I mean, he was talking to me, so I just walked over to him, stood in front of him, my palms open and facing him, just receiving everything he was sending at me, all the anger and resentment that he was sending at me. He was preaching the Bible, but he was doing it in this kind of angry, antagonistic sort of way. And then suddenly he just froze, and he looked way down at, like he dropped a contact lens. He bent way over and looked down at the floor. And, if you saw him, you might think, what, did he lose a contact? Because he just stood froze there, like you would do, don't step on my contact kind of thing. So he didn't lose a contact. He didn't have a contact. He just bent over like that and looked at the floor for 4, 5, 6 seconds. And then he ran out of the room. I never said a word to him. He never came back. He left all the stuff. He had to get somebody else to come and get. he just fled because he couldn't get the energy wired, and he was being drained. Not from my side. I wasn't getting energy from him. I didn't want any of the energy that was in him. It was all just the absolute opposite of Christ. It was anger, resentment, take, control, manipulate, humiliate. This is the energies that were in him. I don't have those energies. I don't want those energies. And he fled. He wouldn't have anything to do with. He couldn't. I wasn't on his menu. He bit the wrong bulldog. I didn't taste good. And he had to leave. That's actually how you cast out demons. You don't take authority over them. You give authority to Christ, to this other side. And the fact is, it's a little demon in a lot of us. You know, I mean, what don't we call sometimes our kids when they're just dragging us down to nothing and they won't sit still and they're just full of energy. And we, the little demons, they got into this and they got into that. They were kids. I mean, they're not malicious or anything, but they're just little imps, we call them. And sometimes they are getting to be a little imps. Of course, my kids are all big, and I have to do that with my grandkids. But the reality is, these are the games that are being played out, and the way in which you attach yourself to the winning side, the life side, is you give up hate, you give up anger, you become enmeshed in love for one another, not sucking love again, but giving love in a way that strengthens you. It doesn't make you dependent. I mentioned a little cartoon that I seen just this morning where they showed a welfare office and there were people standing in line, and one of the very first person in the line wasn't a person at all, it was a big bear. And the welfare person says, "Oh, we're not allowed to feed the bears, it makes them dependent." Mm-hmm. Which is actually what it says if you go to these parks where bears are around, is that don't feed the bears, it makes them dependent. But we do it with people. And the fact is, when you make people dependent like that, you create a pattern in them, spiritually, emotionally, that makes them compatible with other people that are dependent. And before you know it, you have a nation of zombies. They're all dependent on devouring their neighbor through welfare systems. And you want to avoid that. You don't want to be a part of that. You want to have a different, you want to be this other self-reliant, loving, independent individual who will drop everything and come to your aid at the drop of a hat. Because they love you as much as they love themselves. How have you been following some of this? Do you see where I'm going?
Absolutely.
With these concepts, Cheryl?
Yes, making perfect sense to me.
Well, at least that's one. You and me, we know what we're talking about.
That's all that counts right now.
Yeah,
they want to call in, put their hand up, but right now it's just you and me.
Okay. you see this idea. So what I'm really saying is that all these things that Christ talks about, forgiveness, giving, serving others, caring about others as much as you care about yourself, tending to the weightier matters of law, judgment, mercy, and faith, something you never even hear them say in the churches, but Christ said that's what we should be doing. As a matter of fact, that was one of his big condemnations of the Pharisees, is that they weren't doing that. They created a system of Corbin, a system of social welfare where you had to pay in or you could be arrested or fined. You had to join, and the way you joined was you got baptized. That's what the Pharisees were doing. But John the Baptist was out there saying, no, you come and get baptized over here, and this is how you do it. If you've got extra and your neighbor doesn't have enough, you share. That spirit of charity, living faithfully to the perfect law of liberty that Paul talks about, gives you a coat of armor to protect you from being drained by other people. Because the people that will be compatible with you are not the kind of people that want to drain you. They don't want to take the life from you. They don't want to suck the life out of you. And that is where those people are coming from. They're coming to give life. Well, now you think about it. Okay, you've got 500 people together, or 144,000 people together that care about you as much as you care about yourself. They want to give you life. They want to serve you. They want to serve you in a way that makes you stronger, more independent, more self-reliant, more kind, more patient. Or you're with another 144 million people that want to get as much out of life as they can get. They don't care about anybody else but themselves and maybe a few people that they want to have around as friends to rub their backs when they need it. Okay, now you've just divided society into two realms. Which one do you think will have the real power and light in life? Which one do you really want to be a part of? And I tell you, if you do what Christ was saying, not just say you believe in Christ, but actually believe in what he was saying. You want life more abundant, he said? He was asked that several times. His answer was, keep the commandments. What are the commandments? Thou shalt not covet. Thou shalt not steal. Thou shalt not bear false witness. Don't lie to people. Don't deceive people. Don't defraud people. Don't kill them. Don't poison them with GMOs. Try to find ways in which they can live a more healthy life and share it with them. And that's what I know a lot of you guys are doing on this program. But now get together with other people, learn how to do that better and better, and you will find a momentum growing. And that's why we're creating the network, what we call the Living Network. Now we have email groups that you can get on at hisholychurch.org. But the real power is in those people that create a living network by making actual physical connections. Even if it's sometimes they're still spread out, a lot of them by phone calls, but we have people going around, circuit riders, whatever, that will come and visit you just briefly in a coffee shop or whatever, and touch base and create those arcing connections, spiritual connections, so that even next time they call up, you'll actually have a connection as if they were there in the room as they were before. And we're doing this with a real network, independent of the internet. We're using the internet to get to that point, but that's where we're going. And to get those people so that they're connected in a grid that is not affected by the power grid all over the nation will give us a network of power and control like you've never seen. And it should start here in America. But America has been crippled by affluence. And so we're going to have to change our ways. And I tell you, this is what Christ was doing. This is what John the Baptist was doing. This is what they were doing. Was they were connecting these people that cared about each other as much as they cared about themselves. And they were creating an invisible umbrella of spiritual power all over Rome. So that Rome collapsed right in the midst of that. And that existed. And there's a rich history of that follows. But we're not taught that. And that's why I wrote the book, Thy Kingdom Come, to give you a glimpse into that history. And I'm not selling books. You can read it for free on the internet at hisholychurch.net. But guess what? We're out of time again.
Again? Oh, my gosh. Time flies so quickly. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me, Cheryl.
You're so welcome. Lovely, lovely. Thank you so much, Brother Gregory.
God bless. We'll see you next week.
You have been listening to The Keys of the Kingdom with Brother Gregory of His Holy Church. For more information on the educational ministry provided by His Holy Church and Brother Gregory, including services, counseling, lectures, books, and other audio materials, please write to His Church at Summer Lake, Box 10, Summer Lake, Oregon, 97640. You can also find us on the web at www.hisholychurch.net.